This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
This podcast is sponsored by Wise, the app for doing things in other currencies. If you're sending or spending money abroad, you should use Wise. You'll have up to 40 currencies in the palm of your hand. Wise gives you the real exchange rate, which means you'll spend less on fees and more of your money gets where you need it to be. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, welcome to this Moneybox podcast. Should you perk up your investments by going on a guilt trip? Could you perk up your state pension by paying extra national insurance contributions? Be quick, though, the window's narrowing from April. And the couple who perked up their income by more than £100 a week after listening to Moneybox. But first, a senior MP has told this programme that more needs to be done to give almost a million young people access to well over £1 billion that has been saved up for them by the state in child trust funds. We'll hear my interview with the Chair of Parliament's Public Accounts Committee, Sir Geoffrey Clifton Brown, in a couple of minutes. But first, Moneybox reporter Dan Whitworth's here. Dan, just remind us about these child trust funds.
Well, the trust funds were given to every baby born in the UK between the 1st of September 2002 and the 2nd of January 2011. So anyone who right now is aged between roughly 14 and nearly 22 and a half, well, they have one. Now, they were started off by a payment from the government, usually £250 or £500 for babies from low-income households. And the idea was that parents, loved ones, relatives would contribute to those funds over the years. So by the time those babies turned 18, there'd be a nice lump sum waiting for them.
And Dan, we've talked before on Moneybox, haven't we, about the many young people who just don't know about this money. What's being done to get it to them?
Yeah, we have, Paul. And in fact, there's one group in particular who are affected. So when the funds were set up, parents and carers, they were sent a voucher by the government and instructions about how to open a fund with it. Now, if that wasn't done by the child's first birthday, HM Revenue and Customs, HMRC, did it for them. There are 449,000 accounts just like this, and they're holding £927 million. Now, one of those who didn't know she had a child trust fund is 20-year-old Latonya from Gisborough in North Yorkshire. Her family moved around quite a lot when she was younger and as a child because her father was in the army. Now, she told me her story over a hot chocolate in a cafe.
So I was told from my college tutor about a website that we could go to. We got told about them and we could fill out a form to see if we had one. I did. It took me about a year to find where it was, how much was in it, and be able to access it.
Okay, so the big question is how much was in it and what did you do with the money?
So I had £955 in there, which is a lot.
And that's a proper amount of money.
Yeah, it's a lot more than I was expecting, to be honest. And I used it to pay a month's mortgage on my family home because after COVID it was really hard and everything, and my mum couldn't afford it. So I offered to pay, and then the trust fund came along, and it helped me so much.
Have you told anyone else about it? Because obviously you didn't know about it and you found it.
Yeah, I told my older brother. He found one. He had about the same amount as me, so £950-odd. He's for his accommodation. I told my younger brother, who's currently looking for it, and I told my uni friends, who so far that I'm aware of haven't looked for it, but I think that they definitely should.
Dan, I'm tempted to call her Child Trust Fund Ambassador, Sonia. The money was obviously made a huge difference to her and her family, hasn't it? They simply didn't know about it. And the Share Foundation, which has a website to reunite people with this money, has come up with a way to pay out some of those unclaimed child trust funds automatically. How would that work?
Yeah, well, the Share Foundation thinks that if some of those 449,000 accounts set up by HMRC, or if they're not claimed by the time the young person turns 21, then that is a clear indication they don't know about the money. Now, when the account was opened for them, they were given a national insurance number, and the Share Foundation says HMRC could use that in part to track people down and pay the money direct into their bank account. Latonya, who only found out about her child trust fund by chance, thinks this is a great idea.
I think it's a great plan, to be honest. Like I said earlier, my college tutor told me about it. My brother is a year older than me. He went to the same college. He wasn't told. So it's luck of the draw as to who knows, who tells who. And especially with like cost of living and everything, getting it automatically when you didn't know you had it, it can really give people the break that they need for it.
How important could that money be when people, lots of people, are struggling with the finances, are struggling with the cost of living?
Oh, extremely helpful. Like I said, it covered a month's mortgage for our house, so it was kind of one of the differences between, you know, whether we would still have the house or not. For other people, like paying food bills or electricity, water, which has gone through the roof recently, council tax, everything, it can be really, really helpful.
Well, thanks, Dan, and thanks to Latonya. I spoke earlier to Sir Geoffrey Clifton-Brown, the Conservative MP, who's chair of Parliament's Public Accounts Committee, which did a report on child trust funds in 2023. We played him Latonya's story.
Well, you can hear from Latonya's absolute joy at having found this money at a very important point in her life when she's moving from the world of full-time education to the world of work and needing to pay a mortgage, how important these trust funds are to young people. And we know that there are about a million young adults out there who are entitled to these trust funds, and many of them won't know that they exist. And the total amount of money we think at the moment that's outstanding on these million is about 1.4 billion. So this is a big sum of money.
Yes, and of course among them are a smaller group who probably don't know about it because their parent didn't even open an account. This was a default account opened by the government if the parent had done nothing for the first year. That group of people surely need something better, perhaps as the Share Foundation is suggesting, an automatic way so that the money is given to them at 21 if they haven't claimed it.
So the Public Accounts Committee recommended that the government should do more. And I do have a lot of sympathy with the Share Foundation that there should be some sort of default mechanism that these trust funds should be paid out and should be every possible avenue should be explored to find these people. And I do think in a personal capacity, because the committee didn't actually have the Share Foundation's no-fault proposal when they discussed all this. But so in a personal capacity, I do think actually that the government could do a lot more. And I also think that the private sector providers, who after all are charging almost 100 million a year in fees, should be able to do a lot more. And we know, for example, that only 4 out of 55 of them use search companies to try and find and trace these people who are entitled to these accounts. So I think government could do more.
Yes, the government, of course, says that the automatic system, which the Share Foundation has proposed, which you say you have some sympathy with, would be expensive. It says it was grateful for the idea, but it warned that it would take legal consideration and it would require resources. And as we know, sadly, resources are not easily found now, are they?
Well, even if we didn't go down that route, and the problem is here, a lot of it is sharing data, not only within government, different government departments, which, of course, there were problems with data protection, but sharing that information with private sector organisations as well. But the private sector providers, i.e. the people who hold these accounts, do have the details or do have access to these search companies, and they will, if they were used in more out of the 4 out of 55 companies, we would be able to find a lot more of these people who are entitled to these trust funds.
So do you think these financial firms that are managing all this money and charging, as you said, fees, should spend some of those fees on search companies to find people? Because, after all, these people will have a national insurance number if the firm will know about it.
So the national insurance number is a very good way of tracing people. The system as it is at the moment is that individuals do not become aware of what that number is until they're 16. But thereafter, when the trust funds start to accumulate, It should be a relatively straightforward process to be able to actually trace these people. So you'd have thought that if the government made it possible to transfer data between, for example, HMRC that has provided the money for these funds and the Department of Health, it would be a relatively easy job to find these people. And in any case, the private sector providers who are charging, we think, up to $100 million a year for providing this service should be able to use search companies in every case to try and trace these people. So I think this is a real, it's really not right that the government's holding on to this money without doing commensurate effort to try and find out who's entitled to it.
And you said you were speaking in a personal capacity about the Share Foundation proposals because your committee hadn't considered it. Is it an idea that you will get your committee to look at in the future?
Yes. Next time we have the HMRC in front of us, I will ask for an update on this matter just to see where we've got to. So we will be following it up and we will get a reaction from government, which will then be put in the public domain.
So Geoffrey Clifton Brown, MP, and the Investing and Saving Alliance, whose members include companies providing child trust funds, told us the current number of firms using tracing agents has increased since that report Sir Geoffrey mentioned. I'll now do my bit by suggesting to all you listening who are parents, grandparents, other relatives, lecturers, teachers, even employers who know or work with young people aged 16 to 22, tell them they have money in a child trust fund. And if they don't know about it, they can track it down online at sharefound.org. That's sharefound.org. There's been a lot of talk on the news this week about gilts and the bond market. And you may well have wondered, what are they? And what's it got to do with me anyway? Well, it just might be an opportunity to make some guaranteed tax-free returns on your investments. We'll look into how in a minute. But first, what are gilts? Well, when the government needs to borrow money, it issues bonds, or as they're called in the UK, gilts. And those gilts promise a return at the end of a fixed period guaranteed by the government. Like other investments, they can be bought and sold on, well, yes, you guessed it, the bond market. And the price people are willing to pay for them depends on how good a risk they think the government is. Now, the UK government has never defaulted on its debt, well, not since Edward III in the early 1340s. But as the government is seen to handle the economy badly or well, the price people will pay for those bonds goes down and up, and the interest rate earned goes up and down. The interest rates on 30-year loans reached a high on Tuesday, which hasn't been seen since 1998, though it has fallen back a bit since. As I said, these bonds are called gilts, that's G-I-L-T-S, because the certificates used to have a gold edge. And you know, they might just give a golden edge to your investments if you do it right. With me to explain how is Russ Mould. He's the investment director at Brokers AJ Bell. Russ Mould, before we get into investing in gilts, just explain, perhaps a bit better than I did, how a gilt works.
No, your explanation was perfect, Paul. In the end, it is a bond or a loan to His Majesty's government to help the country fund its borrowing, and they come with a preset rate or coupon, and they run for a preset time to their maturity date.
And they give you a return. That coupon is the return, the interest rate.
That's the interest rate, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And you can buy them on the market, and as I understand it, they're all worth £100, or at least they're all face value £100.
Yes.
But if you buy one today, it might be, I don't know, £96. And then when it reaches its maturity in a year or so, the government gives you £100. So you've made £4, or if it's over a year, 4%. Is that gain taxable?
There's no capital gains tax on gilts, no, and nor is there stamp duty. But the income, the coupons are subject to income tax. But of course, you can put them in a tax advantage wrapper like an ISA and a SIP. And also shelter yourself from income tax.
Yes, and that's one sort of ISA, of course, though people might not really expect it to be. But why would someone choose this over perhaps a more straightforward ISA that's tax-free? You can get rates of 4% even with cash now, can't you?
You can, yes, absolutely. And I think with the gilt, you may feel there's an opportunity to make a capital gain. And the reason that a bond's price will go up is if you buy at a certain level and the government bank or the Bank of England interest rate goes down and goes below that level, and that's normally when the bond price will start to rise.
Yes, and so, but what you've got isn't affected by current activity. It's the price you might get
Correct.
If you sold it on the market. But of course, if you hold it to its term, its end, you get that £100 guaranteed by the state.
Correct. The coupon does not change at any time. The price of the bond might do, so that may change the yield, but the coupon or the interest rate is always the same.
Mm. And is it subject to the £85,000 financial services compensation scheme limit, for example?
Oh, that I don't. You know, Paul, in all honesty, I genuinely don't know. I would assume that. Again, given that we're dealing with the government, I would like to think that you wouldn't be in any difficulty there anyway.
I don't think it is. No. Now, how can you buy one of these things? Because people say, oh, this is really complicated. I can just put it in cash, or I can have an investment trust or something. How can you buy them?
For standard gilts, you can now do it as easily as you buy a share through your broker or your platform. So you can do it online, on your laptop, on your phone, at the swipe of a finger or the press of a button.
So it really is that easy? Because it used to be difficult, as I remember.
It used to be a nightmare. When I was a young man, you'd have to go to the post office to do it, and you weren't actually always allowed to actually participate in the initial sale, the initial auction. That you now can do. You can do it for a minimum size of around £1,000, whereas before the minimum auction, even if you could get involved, which you couldn't, the size was something like £500,000.
And if you go online to a platform, I mean, like yours, I know you sell them, but there are many other platforms that do as well. That shows you what's called the yield, how much you can expect to get back.
That's correct, and that will be based upon the price. So again, these things are issued at 100, but as you said, the price will move around. So if you buy a 5% coupon at £100, your yield is 5%. But if the price goes down for any reason to, say, 90, then you buy at 90, your yield is 5.6%. It's just maths.
Right, so fairly straightforward. Now, let's just talk briefly about the effects of, we've heard about rising gilt yields and all this kind of thing. Why is it that the bond market affects mortgages?
Because that's one of the major sources for banks themselves to get finance. So banks can get finance from deposits. They can get it from wholesale debt markets or the gilt market. And so the interest rate that they are charged to raise money or offering their depositors will influence the rate at which they're prepared to lend out or able to lend out on, say, a mortgage, a credit card or a car loan.
So when you hear on the news that, you know, the interest rates on gilts are going up or they're coming down, that is actually quite interesting to individuals with mortgages anyway, because it will affect how much it might cost them to remortgage in the future, in a word.
It could indeed, and it also is very important for His Majesty's government, because it affects the amount that they are charged to borrow, and the more that they're charged to borrow, then the greater the risk that the Chancery of the Exchequer's sums may not add up as expected, and they may have to tax more or spend less, and that's been why it's been in the news so much recently.
Indeed. Russ Mould of AJ Bell, thanks. And if you're thinking of doing this, I always recommend finding a good, independent financial advisor and getting advice. Now, there's less than 3 months left to boost your state pension by filling old gaps in your national insurance record. At the moment, people who've not yet reached pension age and those already on the new state pension can fill gaps in their record back as far as 2006. But from April, that wide window will be shut, and unless the government changes the rules again, it'll narrow down from 18 years back to just 6. New figures given to Moneybox by HMRC show that 37,000 payments have been made online by people taking advantage of this wide window. That's since a new digital service opened last April, which makes things a lot easier. Now, lots of listeners have been getting in touch with us asking, you know, how can I work out if I've got a gap? Should I fill it? How? And many of them have actually done it, like Jan.
I checked on the Gateway site and realised I was a few years short of contributions to receive a full pension. The site stated how much I owed and the difference it would make to my pension. I called and spoke to an extremely helpful young man who told me I didn't need to pay all of the missing years, just some of them. It was quick and very, very easy. Definitely one of my better financial decisions.
Well, listening to that is Helen Morrissey, Head of Retirement Analysis at Hargreaves Lansdown. Helen Morrissey, Jan said it's the best financial decision she's made. But then Emma contacted us as well to say she had gaps, but she's getting conflicting advice about whether it's worth doing. Talk us through the numbers. What does it cost to do this, and what's the payback? What do you gain?
Yeah, so I mean, it can be a really cost-effective way of boosting your retirement income. So if you were looking to purchase like a year's worth of national insurance credits, that would be around £825 per year. Now, for that, you would get 1/35th of the state pension, which works out at around £330. Now, if you look at it, you've paid just over 800 quid for that. You'd only have to be getting your state pension for 3 years to have made your money back.
Yeah, that's a quick payback. I mean, even if it was taxed, that would be a good payback, wouldn't it? 800 odd pounds and you get £300 a year for life, guaranteed by the government, index linked. So not a bad deal. Jan and Emma were not told that all gaps are worth filling, though. How do you work out if you should fill the gaps? Because if you pay that 825 quid and you don't get anything back, it's not worth it, is it?
Yeah, so basically it's really important to get a state pension forecast. So that will highlight if you've got any gaps that need to be filled. You know, it can also highlight if there's any mistakes on your record, so you can go and get them, you know, rectified without having to pay a penny. You may also be able to fill some of those gaps by backdating a claim for a benefit that you might have been entitled to at the time and didn't get. And then also, one of the main reasons why people don't get the full state pension is if they were contracted out of the state second pension. Now, if you were, that can have an impact because you paid less national insurance, and it can mean that even if you do pay for these extra credits, you might not get the uplift in your state pension. So it's really important to check with the Future Pension Service before handing over money.
Yes, that's the Future Pension Service, part of the Department of Work and Pensions. But as we heard from Jan, I shouldn't say I was surprised, should I? But a really helpful young man talked her through it. So it's one of those helplines that really does work. And why might there be gaps in a national insurance record? I mean, a lot of people just start work at, I don't know, 16, 18, a bit older maybe sometimes, and then just work until retirement.
Yeah, so there's a number of reasons why there might be gaps. So it could be periods of time when you were unemployed and weren't claiming any benefits. You could have been working overseas. Another big one is people who have been out of the workforce on caring duties. So, you know, having children, looking after elderly relatives. And with the children, you know, some people didn't claim child benefit, and that comes with a national insurance credit. So if they've not claimed the child benefit, they might find that there's gaps that need to be filled. Mm.
Now, some people have told us it was easy, straightforward. We just had Michael who's emailed us to say, yes, I've done this. It was pretty straightforward. And we've also had another one. Yes, I'm surprised. And I thought the payback period was acceptable. So people do find it easy. Some people, though, say they found it very difficult. Have things changed? Is it easier now than it used to be?
I think the introduction of this digital service has been a real game changer. You know, you mentioned there was 37,000 payments have been made. That's amazing, because before they extended the deadline, a lot of people were doing it by phone, and it was just so busy. There was a lot of reports of people hanging on the line for ages, just not being able to get through. So this new digital service, I think, has been really, really helpful.
Helen Morrissey from Hargreaves Lansdowne, thank you very much. And I believe you can even do it on your mobile using the HMRC app, which you can download from the usual places, and you can do it all on that. Check your record and indeed think about making the payments. Now, just time for a message from another listener who heard our programme recently about a benefit called attendance allowance. You can claim that if you're over state pension age, 66 now, of course, and have a disability or health condition that means you need help with care for yourself. Things like giving yourself a wash, using the toilet, getting in and out of bed safely, even preparing food. As we age, of course, these things can get more difficult, which is why Andrea told her parents about it.
Hi Moneybox, it's Andrea from East London here. I just wanted to send you a note to say thank you very much for your episode on the 7th of December about the attendance allowance. I'd been bugging my parents to apply. I sent them the link to the show, and Mum got online that afternoon and filled it out. And yesterday she got a call from the DWP asking some quick questions, and then confirming that my parents do qualify and they'll be getting the higher rate attendance allowance backdated to the 7th of December. After losing the winter fuel allowance, it's going to make a huge difference to them. So thank you very much. Thank you from me. Thank you from my parents. Without your show, I'm not sure that my mum would have actually put in an application. Thank you.
You're welcome. And that higher rate that Andrea's parents get is £108.55 a week, tax-free. That's more than £5,600 a year. And it's not means-tested. So it doesn't matter if you have savings or a big pension. It's always worth applying if you feel you need help, even if you don't actually get it. Claim online, gov.uk, search attendance allowance, or you can call 0800 731 0122 0800 731 0122 in office hours, or of course ask a charity like maybe Citizens Advice for help. Well, there's been a lot of ways to perk up your finances in this podcast. And of course, you can send us your recipe for making, saving or claiming money by emailing moneybox@bbc.co.uk. You can also send us a message or a voice note, which we love, on WhatsApp 03306 783 183. And if you have questions about insurance, our next podcast is Moneybox Live with Felicity Hannah. She has you covered when it comes to insurance and the cost of insuring your car or your home. What should happen when your home's hit by a flood or other disaster, and if you're dreaming of a holiday somewhere warm, do you need travel insurance? Remember, you can listen live to both programmes on Saturdays and Wednesdays on BBC Radio 4. In today's podcast, the reporter was Dan Whitworth, research is Emma Devlin and Joe Krasner, studio manager Mitch Goodall. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Paul Lewis, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds. And now, do not face the front.
I'm Matthew Side, and Sideways, my podcast from BBC Radio 4, brings you stories of seeing the world differently.
From that moment on, I feel like my life and the way that I view life itself just shifted, literally.
Stories about the ideas that shape our lives.
If a missile had come down and killed us all, it wouldn't have mattered. It was just me in a moment of bliss in the middle of a war zone.
Stories about everything from the ethics of using AI to simulate conversations with the dead to viewing decay as a vehicle for rebirth. Listen to Sideways, first on BBC Sounds.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
This podcast is sponsored by Wise, the app for doing things in other currencies. If you're sending or spending money abroad, you should use Wise. You'll have up to 40 currencies in the palm of your hand. Wise gives you the real exchange rate, which means you'll spend less on fees and more of your money gets where you need it to be. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.